I'd like to turn the time over to Tyrell Wiltse.
Hi, everybody. Just a moment here to get liquefied. Don't worry, I'm not going to turn into a puddle. All right, I'm going to move around a little bit. First thing I'd like to do is, everybody has had a day before today. This is kind of the end of your day, so I'd like us to all just kind of allow ourselves to be centered. It'll allow for processing the mass volume of information that's going to come through a little bit easier. So just go ahead and allow yourself to sit comfortably. Breathe regularly, however feels good for you. And just allow yourself to be here. Everything that's going on outside can be put aside. Everything's going to be perfect when you're done here. So just allow it to be. And then I've got some Tingxia chimes here. They're really great for clearing space. And if you have any questions about some of the weird things I've asked you to do so far, feel free to talk to me afterwards. When I was really young, about 2 months old, my folks, as many do, took me in for vaccination, pertussis vaccination, and I had an allergic reaction to it. The allergic reaction resulted in encephalitis, swelling of the brain, as well as a coma that I ended up dying three times before 2 years old, most of them around the one-year-old range. The first time and the second time were from respiratory arrest, and the third time was from a cardiac arrest. In addition to that, I went into a coma for about a week, and then when I was about 7 years old or so, as a direct result of the seizures that resulted from the encephalitis, I had a pretty profound experience, and that's the one I'll be sharing with you, the fourth one. The other ones I've gone back to in meditation and pulled more information from them. But the fourth one, I was going to my folks' cabin up in Wyoming. The trip was kind of an up and down trip, going through the hills and Wyoming to get to the cabin, and I began to have a seizure as we were going up and down these hills. The seizure resulted in a very vivid, very complex, especially for a seven-year-old, out-of-body experience. And the way it started out, my experience with seizures, I get a disassociation with my physical body. And in this particular instance, it was a complete separation of it. So this up and down, and then I just started to, I really didn't like roller coasters growing up, and this just pinged right now, but this up and down sensation, I started to drift away from my body. Right now I feel within my body, my spirit, my energy body, the rest of them are contained within the physical form. But in this experience, that identity, that self, that soul, began to kind of step back from what was going on in the physical body. And that allowed me to have kind of a detached perspective of what was going on. Because what was going on for my physical body was very scary. And my parents were afraid too, and they were upset because I hadn't had a seizure in a while. And they were hoping for a nice trip into the cabin, and then this came down. That separation got to the point where I no longer associated with my physical body, and when that association melted away, as it were, the idea of who I was in relation to that physical body started to melt away as well. My perspective began to get grander, and I was in the car observing the scene, emotionally detached from it and what was going on. And then I'd gone back to over the car and observing the movement of the car, a little Bronco that we had for years, up and down and up and down it went. And then I was no longer associated with any of that. And I just felt myself kind of relax into, in a visualization sense, could be described as outer space, only in so much as it was dark. It was like being caught in a net, and not like a fish being caught in a net, but being caught from drifting beyond the physical sphere into the other realms in this net of physical reality, if you will. And as I rested gently in that net, I became aware of a grander presence. My upbringing was small town Christian. I associated it with God. And the God presence, the divine presence, talked to me in much the same way that we receive information in dreams. I don't know how many of you remember your dreams very vividly, but for me, there isn't separation between questions asked and questions answered. It's ask, receive. And that's very much the way this was when I was having this experience. I didn't understand why I was out of my physical body and why it was such a big deal and why I couldn't just stay out of my physical body, because it was wonderful. It was a sensation of comfort and connection and knowing. So I asked questions. And a lot of the questions that I asked were, how does this physical body supposed to work? Because my early experience with it was I was getting short-circuited every time I tried to interact and connect with this physical reality, touch and feel and move. One of the things that I neglected to mention earlier, as a result of the seizures and the coma, I actually had intensive physical and occupational therapy up until about the age 3, from 2 months to about age 3, to relearn things like not having my hands like this, and my legs were that way too, but it's harder to do when I'm standing. And reusing and learning how this body worked. My mom was just super diligent. My dad was super diligent. My older sister, 5 years older than me, she was learning from my mom how to get my body to do the standard function. This experience of mine was primarily centered around how is it supposed to work, because it's not doing what I want it to. Not just the physical body, but I didn't understand the human dynamic, how these people, and for me, since I had my experiences very early on, there wasn't a separation between the physical reality and what have some referred to as beyond the veil or the angelic realms or anything of that nature. So I didn't understand why these angelic beings that I saw around me all the time, they were acting in a way that was counter to what their spirit was saying, what their energy was saying. So I asked, and I got pictures, came with immediate ask and answer, receive kind of feedback. And that was, how do ants work? I loved ants growing up. They were all over the place, and they would make their little hills, and I wanted to know, how do ants work? I was shown just like a microscopic view of how the ant itself works, and then how the ant works in the colony, and how that colony is actually working as part of a larger system to nourish and cultivate the soil, and how that makes it so other things can grow. And it just kept growing bigger and bigger. And because I was in a space detached from the physical limitations of my body, the vastness of the experience could fully be communicated to my inquiring self. And then I got into how people are operating much the same way, and how the construct, the physical construct of the universe itself, this universe specifically, was designed in such a way with so many safeguards, so many different complementary aspects, that there wasn't any way to do it wrong, which was the big thing that I was concerned of, because I was like, oh, I'm doing it wrong. I don't know how to make this body do what I want it to. I don't know how to express myself, how to communicate. One of the fun side effects for my family was that I would release blood-curdling screams when they were trying to get my physical body into the proper alignment, because I couldn't express the sheer pain and discomfort and frustration that came with not knowing how to make this do what I want it to. This fourth experience, I've revisited a lot in my meditations, in my self-explorations. It has encouraged me from a space of absolute knowing that there is a divine plan. We're all playing our parts in it. It allowed me to find a state of calm, joy, and peace, and in many ways reconnect in this physical reality to that experience of being supported, of being connected. In the work that I've chosen to do now, this is the same thing that I do, is I show people that it's not that far away. But only through my many experiences was it shown to me in a way that it no longer requires faith for me, because I know, I absolutely know. And just as I can see each of you here tonight, I can see angelic presences, guides, ancestors. I can hear the guidance that they have. I can interact in much the same way as I did in that communion with divinity. Since then, I've had a couple other different flavors of out-of-body, disassociative experiences. The fifth one was contact with another energy presence, and then the most recent one, just a couple of months ago, was a complete falling away of the identity of self that I dissociated with Tyrell for the last 30 years. And I kind of feel like I'm complete. We ready for questions?
Thank you, Tyrell.
The thing that I'd like to point out here, it seemed like this experience was really very brief, but if you listen carefully, there were many elements of the NDE that you hear usually in more detail. It doesn't mean because of the briefness that it's any less significant than some of the experiences that are very broad and very detailed. Oftentimes, when a person is sharing their experience, especially, it's my understanding, this is the first time he's shared this experience publicly, there may be aspects of his experience that occurred that may not be readily apparent in the presentation. So just kind of keep that in mind, and I encourage you that if you have questions, please, let's get them out there for him.
I had the question that you say that you can get into a state where you can communicate with maybe guardian angels or family, and so I was wondering, how do you get to that state that you can do that?
Well, for me, it was something that was a natural part of my reality, but to teach it, to do it at will, was something that I began exploring many different religions and spiritual texts to develop meditations, to develop energy clearing techniques, to develop consciousness techniques, Buddhism, Christianity, even spellcraft, shamanism, things like that. They've got a ritual, a craft to get you into that space where you can tune in without the distractions. Part of what we did earlier was allow you to come to that space where you could hear messages more clearly, you could be more centered and focused. I'll offer it later, but I've got an ebook that goes into expanding and focusing on those clair senses. Most people have heard of clairvoyance. It's pretty popular in the movies, and that's how a lot of people experience near-death experience, is through the visualization. We do process quite a bit of information through our eyes, and our mind's eye, if you will. There's also claircognizance, which is clear thinking, and that is where you're directly receiving information, not in a spoken form or visual form, but in the direct synchronization of thought. There's also clairaudience, which is the clear hearing, and clairsentience, which is clear feeling. And clear feeling is also fairly common. People experience it as intuition or a gut instinct to do things. And then there's also claircombinance, which is a combination of any of those four base clairs. But all of those are fairly easily explorable, and the individual can really determine how far they get into that. I've actually got a few clients here that have explored a little bit of their clairsenses and had experiences associated with that, tuning into guides, tuning into passed on loved ones, tuning into divinity, you know, just reconnecting to however you experience the divine.
Seven is very young, and so I'm curious as to your pathway to get where you are now. Did you start that then, or did you just pick up information? Can you explain your journey to where you are now and where you think you might go with this?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Early on, I kept a lot of this stuff to myself. From what I could tell from everybody around me, my family, friends, the rest of that, they didn't see the world. They didn't experience the world the way that I did. So I kept it to myself because I didn't want to be ostracized. I didn't want to be weird and possessed and all the other fun things that get assigned to that kind of experience. I studied in private a lot of it. And anytime I'd see an angel, or I also had experiences with a demonic or a heavier presence, I would just kind of keep it to myself, and I would work on processing it on my own. I didn't really get into it until about 3 years ago. All the studying I'd done was just for me. But about 3 years ago, I decided, I've studied all this, my library's extensive, I've got to talk to people about this. It was only in meeting with Angie that my near-death experience became a prominent subject that people wanted to discuss. The self-study, the self-guidance, but also spending enough time with myself in silent meditation, in prayer, in communion with nature, to trust the answers that I was getting. Because sometimes they seem way out there. In my 7-year-old context, it was like, okay, yeah, this is how things are. I have no reason to believe otherwise. I also wasn't so reliant on my visual senses or my tactile senses because of the experience that I had growing up. So it didn't really relate a whole lot in the tangible, detail-oriented way to how we experience this physical realm. So finding ways to develop trust in myself, trust in the inspiration, intuition, guidance that I'm receiving, and then talking to other people about it. That's one way that really just, I don't know if everyone's familiar with a toroid, but a toroid is basically how the universe is constructed. There's this toroidal energy field. A lot of people experience it as an aura because they'll see the outlines. When people see angels, it's often the energy halo that goes around them that they experience as wings. So this toroid of energy, when you choose to interact with somebody and really make that connection, then you begin to share on an energetic level. A lot of you have probably been around people for a couple of years, and you can finish their sentences, you know what they're thinking. There isn't as much verbal and visual communication that needs to happen. It's a practice thing. So this is something that I've been practicing, and I chose to really step into it about 3 years ago. I wrote the ebook with some assistance from Angie, and I'm going to be writing the second one, which is about 300 pages, and that's an operator's manual for being human, because it's a pretty useful tool for us to have. And with my disassociative experience, this is, it's like driving a meat suit around. So how does it work? And what are the reasons that we're doing what we're doing?
Well, thank you for sharing your story. First of all, please share it more.
Okay.
Secondly, I was curious about, as a 7-year-old, and you had specifically mentioned it was very difficult for you physically to be manipulated, to have your body manipulated in normal ways. How did this change your physical experience after the NDE?
I was a lot more comfortable being in body, if you will. It was a unique association. As my body would go into seizure, I would disassociate with it because it was contorting and it hurt and all these other things. I didn't want to be part of that. So my self, my identity, would remove itself, usually just in the room distance from the experience. my parents would get scared, and I didn't want to be interacting with the scared energy of my parents, so I would remove myself from that situation. At 7, though, most of the seizures had pretty much come to a halt. I had off and on a little deep mal and a couple of grand mal seizures up until I was about 10, but they were much fewer and further between. This near-death experience at 7 allowed me to trust in the lessons, in the experiences that I was having, and really allowed me to be in my body and know that it was going to keep me safe while I was here having this, I call it temporary physical existence, because we know that we've got this starting point and this ending point somewhere. It's temporary, and we oftentimes will experience ourselves as grander than just, I was born, and I'm dead, and that's it.
How did it change the way your parents and your older sibling interacted with you physically is what I'm really interested in. Again, it was very difficult for you to be in your physical body.
Yeah.
Afterward, it was easier. It allowed you to move forward in trust. How did it influence your physical development and the interaction between your parents and your siblings and you physically?
Okay. The interaction with my family, it changed it because at that point in time, I knew what I was experiencing was real. I knew it was true. I knew it was absolutely applicable. The interactions with my family, because I wasn't communicating to them, I wasn't telling them what was going on for me, they began to get scared and ask more questions that weren't easily answered in the context that they were ready to hear them in. I didn't have the training to relay, okay, here's this paradigm over here. I know you haven't even heard of it because it's not in your religion, it's not in your science background, but here's this paradigm, and in this paradigm, this reality that I'm experiencing exists. And here's how you relate to it, and here's some words for it. Growing up, because I wasn't sure of myself, I was very distant from my family. Oftentimes I'd wake them up in the middle of the night because my dreams were so intense that I'd be yelling and making a bunch of noise and moving around because I was very tactily experiencing my dream. Recently, the beginning of this year, I actually had a reunion of sorts with my family. I have begun communicating with them more of the stuff that's going on here. They began to tune into the books and the radio interviews and stuff like that that I've been doing, and trying to understand some of the things I haven't talked to them about in 30 plus years in a context that works for them.
You said that you have had angels surrounding you a lot and family members that have passed on. If you feel comfortable sharing, what are some of the activities that they do with you? Have they given you messages or assistance? Could you share some things with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. A lot of the time, the communications are in the clairsentient form. I feel their presence. I experience even the smell, like the smell of my mom's perfume or the smell of my grandpa's cigars or stuff like that. It'll waft in, and there won't be any physical source for that to be coming into my space. I'll experience that. Oftentimes, it's in direct response to a question that I've either verbalized or that has been recurring in my space, such as, am I doing the right thing? That's a big one that comes up all the time. Am I doing the right thing? Am I on the right path? I've begun to refer to them as synchronicity cycles, where it will seem like nothing's associated, nothing applies, and then one thing will hit, and another thing, and then it just crescendos into this amazing, passionate experience that reminds me I am on the right path. Recently, my mom actually spoke to me as I was right in between dream state and waking up, and she woke me up in the way that she had for many years. It's time to get up, sweetie. It took me a little bit to remember what her voice sounded like because she passed away when I was 15. While she's been around, she hasn't verbally communicated to me. When I had that connection, it was so much of a release because of what I was going through. Get up, get out of bed, time for another day kind of thing. With other people's guides, oftentimes they will speak to me when we're doing a reading or we're doing a balancing session or something like that. They'll speak to me, not always in words, sometimes in pictures, sometimes just in thoughts. And oftentimes they don't mean a whole lot to me, but I can clearly tell that they're for the person that I'm communicating with. But again, these are things I started to develop because growing up, I thought, well, I must be a little batty because I can hear people that aren't here and are having whole conversations, and I can see people that nobody else sees. When I started to tune into the spirituality, the religion, even science, you know, metaphysics has come leaps and bounds in identifying these other subtle energy states, the other dimensions that run parallel to this physical dimension and interact with it. As I studied, my foundation, my connection to the information became much more clear.
It's going to be a simple question, but also a difficult question, because given the, so you have your experience of the divine energy, where you ask a question, receive the answer, and then you have the day-to-day experience of the so-called 3D linear strategic planning and so forth, and coming out of a background, whatever, personal, family, societal narratives. How do you deal with the dissonance between the two on a day-to-day basis? Because, and even in my spiritual experiences, can be quite disruptive. Mm-hmm. So how do you either smooth out the disruptions or keep things perhaps within a certain space or open a sacred space, or when it does get disrupted, get back into balance? Or I'll leave that open. What's your experience there?
Simple answer, practice. Longer answer is, as I connect back to the NDE especially, the state of divine perfection, the absolute purpose behind everything that has been created, is being created, that makes the little hiccups, the little stumbling blocks, much easier to handle. While I often meditate and often expand into all the different experiences I have, and I've got notebooks full of tools that I've discovered through meditation and study and these rest of these things, the truth of it is that I get to have the experience, regardless of what it is, and I get to learn from it. And if I'm not in the space to learn from it, then I just focus on having the experience. If I want to come back to it, or have a conversation, or however I choose to revisit that, I trust that all the pertinent information that I need to have will be there. A really fun way I receive inspiration is through Facebook. I've got my news feed set to give me the most recent posts. And always, when I'm having an experience, somebody else is having an experience, and it shows up in the Facebook feed. Another way to do that in your day-to-day life is to talk to people about it. It is tough to develop a dialogue, especially in a public setting, who might hear what, but having a dialogue and being focused on that conversation, so much gets resolved just in having the conversation, just in dissolving the illusion that we're separate beings. We're infinity expressing itself through a finite medium.
Hi. So before, you said you were raised as like small town Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you're still a Christian or how you identify yourself now.
Awesome question. As I got further into my meditations, one of the places that I would visit was the bright blue pagoda, what I identify as God, the masculine divine, and I hang out there. And we just hang out and ask and receive answers and just be in that divine masculine embrace. In addition to that, often through nature, I experience the divine feminine, the creative, nurturing aspect of the divinity. Beyond that, I also experience a source energy, which goes beyond a dualistic construct. So it's neither masculine nor feminine. It encompasses all of that. I identify myself now as a universalist. I feel that all the religions, all the spiritual paths, science, everything that we're doing is a puzzle piece in the grander jigsaw that we're putting together. Everybody has got their own little picture that they're building. My personal picture looks like a sample of Buddhism, a sample of Toltec shamanism, a sample of Christianity, and all these other pieces, and then my picture emerges. One of the grander schemes that I'm working on is world peace. thank goodness for all those beauty show pageants I watched growing up, because it put it in my mind as a possibility. I see that being accomplished through practical tools, and I see those tools in a multitude of, again, religions, spiritual paths, science, all of them. I really love the work of Nassim Haramein. He's great at merging the science with the spirituality and creating a common ground.
You've experienced awareness of these other realms, and you interact with them. Have you at any time tangibly in that body made contact?
The simple answer is yeah. The integration of the subtle body, which encompasses the clair senses, with the physical body, which is something that I've practiced on quite a bit, because as I read in Buddhism, for instance, they speak of the enlightened being. Christianity, you know, Jesus is commonly referred to as being awakened and connected to his divinity as well as his physical body. The interaction with those other realms, with those other vibrational wavelengths, those overlapping dimensions, happens within the physical body to an extent. What I've noticed, and going back to Andy's question, there's certain vibrational frequencies, just like when I was having the seizures, that are too intense for the physical body to experience the full force of them. The vibrational frequencies are too high or too low. The physical body has a reaction to it. That shows up in people having diseases and chronic pain and stuff like that. For me, I've had a debilitating back injury recently from all the heavy lifting I was doing when I was working in construction inspection. I literally could not get out of bed. I just could not move. And that gave me a more recent opportunity to find an association of self that wasn't constrained within the physical body, because the pain was so intense that I couldn't consciously focus on anything other than just the pain. Those senses, those other experiences can be filtered and channeled and expressed through the physical body. They don't always operate in the same context, though. They aren't always in the same paradigm. Some of the dimensional constructs that I've experienced, they don't have the same rules, basically, as physical reality. Physical reality, you know, you've got gravitation, you've got all these other things that interact with it. But in some of these other realms, flight is totally what everybody does. I mean, there's no reason to walk around because their gravity doesn't have the same aspect. A lot of times in my dream states, I'll experience peaks of place to visit in conscious meditation. Then I'll revisit those places and kind of explore them a little bit more.
With the seizures that you had early in life, did your parents take you to any doctors? And
oh, yeah.
Did they give you anything like Depakote, Xerontin to try and block the seizures? Or?
I just recently started communicating with my dad about this. My biological mom has passed on for 30 years, basically. I just thought it would be too painful for him to talk about his son passing away, that kind of thing. And so much for thinking, because he was like, yeah, I was wondering why you weren't talking to me about this stuff. So the specific medication that I was receiving, I'm not familiar on. My dad was an EMT. He trained in that. As well as I found out recently that he was also in priesthood training as I was growing up, and he chose another path. So while I thought, you know, he was very logically oriented, he had a lot of these same experiences. What I do know is that I was commonly referred to in the Billings medical community. The Powell is a smaller town where I grew up, Powell, Wyoming. That I was referred to as a miracle baby, because I had such a tough run of things, and they had done so much, major surgeries and all this other work to give me a healthy life. They had specialists and the top experts in the field looking at what was going on with me and trying to figure it out. I'm definitely going to explore that a little bit more. My dad also he's got all the medical reports and stuff. They're in the safe, and he doesn't know how to get to them yet, so they're buried away in the garage. So that's definitely something that I'm going to explore and understand a little bit more of. I've had an association with Western medicine, been kind of standoffish, just based on my family's experience and my personal experience with it. it would definitely be useful to see, you know, what was going on to determine what interactions in the physical realm causing this. I know a big part of it, as I re-experienced in meditation, was I didn't want to be here. Here was no fun, especially to a kid who wanted to play and do the rest of this. My body didn't do what I wanted it to. My speech patterns didn't do what I wanted them to. I could experience this complete connection, complete ease, and everything else when I was out of body, and that's what was happening when I was having seizures. I'd just go out of body. I'm done with this. I'm out. That was a big part of the spiritual interaction with my physical self. Thank you. Yeah, that is something I'm going to be exploring more.
I agree with you. Religion and spirituality are not mutually exclusive. They're clear down to the quantum level, clear down to the mutons and the quarks. We're all connected, and it's an illusion that we're separate. But I'm just curious with you, and I know that that reality exists. And it's not a matter of faith, that I've always said since I was a little girl, I know.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious, do you have a greater tendency to have lucid dreams or hypnagogic dreams, serendipities, coincidences, more than the average person? And the other thing I want to say, I was just thinking that people with post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a dissociative disorder, are they more inclined to have spiritual experiences? You know, the physicists tell us there are 11 dimensions, and we're in the third. We don't want to get stuck in the fourth. We want to go in the fifth or more, you know. Just sitting there thinking, but they have a greater tendency, so...
Through my work that I really started to get into the last 3 years, post-traumatic stress is a big area that I focus on with people. Now, it's not always identified in the individual as PTSD. It's not post-traumatic stress syndrome, the disorder that they're experiencing. But its symptoms are much the same. And what I experience is people come to what I call threshold of change. And they no longer want to continue to experience these cycles that they're in. And so they keep butting up against this threshold. And when they get to it, they have a choice to go into something they don't know or to continue doing what they've been doing. Those cycles, those synchronicities, those serendipities that you were talking about, I absolutely was experiencing those in my life over and over and over and over again. And eventually, I got what the lesson was. And how to show other people that lesson for themselves, not just my lessons. My lessons are awesome, but they're about the individual's experience. Showing people that process and documenting my own journey has been a big part of what I'm meant to be doing. It's been a big part of this experience that I've chosen. Faith versus knowing. Some people, when they know, it's no fun. It's no fun to just know. I love just knowing. I spent so many years not knowing, and I'm not sure. And just knowing is comfortable. Other people, they want that specific vibration, that feeling of faith, however it shows up. Again, that universalism. However it shows up for the individual, I experience as perfect.
From an NDE to another NDE, I want some personal clarification, because I may be reading in between the lines because I can, to a certain degree.
Because NDEs can see NDEs.
Yes. It's going to be a multi-question. I have to do it in sequence so other people can somewhat understand how I'm going, jumping to these conclusions.
Yeah, telepathy is no fun for the audience.
Yeah, exactly. You said that you can teleport, dissociate. With that, are you gaining more insight because you can do that?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you want to go into the rest of it too?
Do you feel, because you can do that, you are, I'm jumping to conclusions that I can tell you're also an energy healer?
Yep.
Into vibrational medicine, which is, again, typical. Do you feel like you are drawn to certain energies when you teleport or disassociate?
Yeah, the different energies, it's kind of like sonar or like an energy frequency. I also, when I meditate, I make little notes, and it allows me to return to those specific arenas to further learn from that experience.
When you're drawn to those energies, and I know exactly what you're saying, but I know you have to explain it to people.
Right.
When you're drawn to the energy, with that same wisdom, that intellect that you get, receiving this revelation on, I'm drawn to a person's home, and I know exactly why I'm being drawn to that person's home, and thus know what I need to do to help that healing. Is that similar in your experience, and then that pure intelligence with helping that person, then you also gain more intelligence because of that experience too?
Yeah. This is part of the fun when dealing with energy.
Yeah, exactly.
So
mine's very strong.
Yeah, we're arcing and
yes.
Anywho, the experiences are that again, as I mentioned in the NDE, that disassociation with this is who I am, confined, constrained by this, leaving that uniqueness, that finite expression of self, allows for an insertion into the perception, the paradigms in those other reality experiences, those other energy beings, if you will. The way it showed up to me in a pretty profound meditation was the toroidal energy that I was talking about earlier, that energy bubble that surrounds people, is also their perception filter for how things work, what reality is, that kind of thing. And it's unique to the individual, because the individual's had all their unique experiences. But it can also be experienced by another person who's had the practice in it, and just leaving that experience and inserting yourself into the other person's experience.
What does paradigm mean?
Paradigm, P-A-R-D-I-G-M. Paradigm is essentially, it's the construct that an idea or a reality fits into. So if you were to look at like this building, it would be the support structures that everything else is built on. Science is referring to it as the quantum probability matrix, basically that underlying mesh that determines, based on vibrational frequency, what shows up, whether you or your cells or whatever else show up on whatever construct, whatever level.
So a paradigm is essentially a base or a foundation.
Yes.
On which a verity is founded.
Right. If you're presented with an idea, when the colonists came to America and the Native Americans had no construct, no paradigm for a ship of that size coming from that direction, they really couldn't see it. It's called a scotoma in metaphysics and whatnot. Couldn't see it because they had no context for it. But that's what this experience of physical reality and non-physical reality.
In the email, it mentions how your NDE experience has helped you with your work in helping troubled young children.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that?
These same energy precepts, they're very applicable to children, because children, they operate more on an energetic level than a logic level. Oftentimes when you ask a kid, why did you do that? I don't know. Because they really don't know. They were just in that energy, so they acted on that energy. I have a school program that teaches nonviolence energy awareness in schools, and we use the equation E times A equals C. Energy times action equals creation. So just that simple context gives the students, the parents, the teachers, a foundational tool to communicate from. Because they understand now that I'm not doing this just because I don't like you. I'm doing this because I'm feeling this energy, and I feel that I get to take action on it. One of the supplementary concepts that we say is shift before you create. So shift your energy at least into a neutral, if not a positive energy, before creating from it. So that gets the kids into like, oh wait, just because I feel something doesn't mean I have to act out on it. Suicide, bullying, drug use, these kind of things have just skyrocketed in the schools because the kids are having these experiences and they don't feel like they have anybody to talk to. Nobody seems to understand. So we go in with the supplementary education to say, okay, here's another way to explore that. And we do it non-denominational, so kids get to have the experience of a foundation without having to say, okay, well, now you're signed up at the synagogue for the next 2 months or whatever. It allows them to have their unique experience.
So some of us are not highly skilled in the metaphysics of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have insights or general truths that you brought back or that you received during your NDE, the fourth one especially, about life, before life, mm-hmm. after life, that would be applicable or helpful to us?
Yeah. So again, a lot of that is in the ebook. I leave it kind of open for the individuals to explore. But some of the truths that I brought back were everything is perfect. It couldn't exist if it wasn't. No matter what anybody's experiencing, no matter the depth of the sorrow or the height of the elation, that whole experience is absolutely perfect. That's the only thing that can exist in this physical realm. Anything else falls away. Another precept was, you're not supposed to know all the answers, because if you knew everything, there would be no reason for you to be here. The reason being here is remembering or reassimilating all that information that you, or the experience that you forgot. You gave it up to get another set of information. Release the paradigm like we were talking about. You release that construct so that you can have something new come in. So Angie and I have gotten into this a little bit because as we're experiencing these alternate realities, if you will, or these parallel dimensions or these afterlife experiences, you have agreement reality, which is you and I both agree right now we're having a conversation and that there's other people in the room and that nobody is just going to spontaneously disappear as far as we know. That's an agreement reality. There's also conditional realities that are built off of that agreement reality. So if somebody, for instance, disappeared, then the conditional realities that were built on everybody staying physical for this experience would begin to fall away. So that supporting paradigm, that construct that they were built on, those conditional realities will flow out from that.
I'm requesting a summary from you, simplified. The normal human being, we eat, we sleep, we go to work, we interact with one another, we have those normal human experiences. We get sick, we get well. So what you're saying is, according to my experience and my knowledge, and I'd like you to explain that, I can live in a human body and just be aware of my humanness. Or I can live in a human body and be fully aware of the fact that I am a divine essence.
Yes.
Living in a human body. I can move to that other state of awareness other than just the normal human life, where I know without a doubt that I am this divine essence living and functioning here in a human body in this limited illusionary experience. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. As I've read different religions, different spiritual teachings, in Toltec shamanism, it's what's called the controlled folly. When you get to a certain point of awareness, when you get to a certain point of experience, you know that all of this is conditionally real. It's built on continuing this human experience. You also know that there is more beyond this. Your controlled folly is that while knowing all this, you are choosing to interact in this physical form. It really comes down to personal choice. If you want to have an expanded experience all the time, every day, then you can do that. If you want to, nope, that's way too much noise, that's way too much stuff going on, I just want to be here and now and just interacting on the physical, you can choose that too. This human experience that we are engaged in is all about choice. As infinite interconnected beings, there's no reason for choice because we're connected to everything. There is no separation. So that's what this experience is about, is making choices. Learning from them or not, it's still a choice, but it's those choices that determine the path that we lead. And oftentimes when people have led a certain path, when they go and have their near-death experience, they do a review of the different choices that they made, and that's what their experience looks like. So what I do is teach people to do that in a conscious state without leaving their body, because you know there's some complications that come with physically dying. So.
Okay, thank you so much, Tyrell.
Thank you.